Good afternoon, colleagues of the press. It's a pleasure to have you here. And without further ado, let me give the floor to the Secretary General of the United Nations. Mr. Secretary General.
Good afternoon. It's coming. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. Thank you very much. Merci. I'm honored to be back in Addis Ababa to celebrate the 50 years of African solidarity with the Organization of African Unity and then the African Union. The United Nations has been Africa's strongest partner throughout this half a century. We are firmly committed to standing with Africa now in the future. The United Nations and the African Union share a history of productive collaboration. We are working for unity, solidarity, and results. I see Africa on the rise. I welcome progress on development, good governance, and human rights. I especially commend Africa's leaders for striving to improve conditions for the continent's people. We have 1,000 days to reach our Millennium Development Goals. Now is the time to finish the job by accelerating progress. We must seize the unparalleled opportunity to shape our future development agenda. I hope I have appointed a number of African experts to my team in important decision-making roles. And I am proud to have brought many top-level women advisors here, as you see now. We are pressing for progress across Africa's development agenda. We had very successful meetings today on malaria and yesterday on maternal and child health. I am also committed to greater progress on HIV and AIDS. We are working for a future where virtually all African mothers survive childbirth and raise their HIV-free babies into healthy adults. Just this week, we launched an initiative to help Africa train and deploy 1 million community health workers by 2015 to speed progress on the MDGs. In my address to the African Union, I spoke out strongly against sexual violence in conflict. We must end the silence and denial surrounding this terrible problem, not just here, but around the world. I call on African leaders to join me in raising our voices on behalf of the victims. They need our unrelenting advocacy. Beyond this, women must play a significant role in peace building and the reconstruction of their societies. The United Nations is proud to have prepared a roster of 200 African women who are ready to contribute to this effort. During this summit, I have met with close to 20 leaders. We discussed a range of issues and moved forward on several fronts. As you know, we plan to sign a political framework on the Democratic Republic of the Congo this morning. There were no fundamental differences over the content of the framework. Some procedural issues, however, did arise, and we have agreed to postpone the signing. The United Nations remains committed to helping foster greater stability in the country. We are also determined to help people of Mali at this critical hour. As I told the summit, this is a moral imperative for the entire international community. The humanitarian agencies are already working to alleviate the suffering of the Malian people, and we have deployed specialists to help on both the military and political tracks. The welcome contribution and decisive action of the French government alongside Malian and other African forces has allowed significant advances in the restoration of Malian territorial integrity. I personally pledge to ensure that the United Nations stands ready to undertake a major system-wide effort for peace building, governance and security sector reform, physical reconstruction and regional cooperation. On Sudan and South Sudan, I commend the authorities of both countries for taking positive steps to resolve their differences. Implementation of the agreement is now of paramount importance. I also urge Sudan to allow humanitarian assistance in southern Kordofan and Blue Nile states. In Somalia, the fall of Kismayo and other areas previously held by Al-Shabaab has opened up space for peace building. I am proposing to the Security Council the establishment of a new UN presence as part of our efforts to strengthen the UN-AU partnership on the ground. The Central African Republic is making progress. I pay tribute to the President Denis Sassou Nguesso for his mediation leading to the political agreement to stabilize the situation. I call on the parties to move with the implementation of the Libreville Agreement. I'm pleased to see the African Union, United Nations, ECOWAS, and the Community of Portuguese-Speaking Countries, CPLP, coordinating their efforts on Guinea-Bissau and calling for a transitional roadmap for the return to constitutional order in Bissau. The African Union took an historic step when it appointed its first female chairperson. I congratulate Her Excellency Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. I fully agree with her statement that the future of Africa is inextricably linked with that of the rest of humanity and the world over. The United Nations is committed to working with the African Union to advance progress on this continent and build a better future for all. I thank you very much. Merci beaucoup.
Well, we'll now proceed to the questions. I will ask you to introduce yourselves and to get close to a microphone so that everybody can hear. The lady, please.
Sadale, and I'm from a local magazine called Addis Standard. You said there has not been major differences, but some procedural points. Would you please elaborate on that? Because outside the talk here is that the negotiations have collapsed on the DRC. Thank you very much.
Le secrétaire général, je suis Raphaël Vogo. Je travaille pour l'agence de presse Chine Nouvelle sur la République démocratique du Congo notamment. Vous avez parlé des questions de procédure. Les autorités de Kinshasa s'impatientent quant à la mise en place de la force multinationale et à la SADC. On parlait d'une brigade en attente qui est prête à se déployer sur le terrain. Quelles sont ces questions de procédure qui empêchent la mise en place de cette force multinationale? Merci.
First of all, as I said, there is no fundamental differences or objections to the contents of the agreement which we have been discussing with the leaders of eight countries. They are DRC, Democratic Republic of the Congo, and Rwanda, Uganda, Republic of Congo, Brazzaville, Congo, Burundi, and South Africa, Angola, Tanzania. I met all of the leaders of these countries, and previously I have been discussing with them in person, as well as through my personal envoy, my chef de cabinet. This is a broader political and security framework, whereby the country, particularly the DRC, will be committed to certain policies regarding the situation on which they can do. And other regional countries will also commit to support and to cooperate fully. But I'm not going to go into detail of this matter. In the course of our discussions, some member states expressed some desire that they needed more time to discuss. These are a simple reason why I had to postpone the signing event this morning. About this idea of neutral force, etc. I know that there was serious concerns expressed during the crisis last year in Goma. There is some perception issues about the United Nations mission, MONUSCO, that I regret that there is some misinformed or incorrect perceptions about what the mandate and function and mission of procedures of MONUSCO is doing. We have a strict mandate in terms of operational procedures and the scope of our missions in accordance with the Security Council. The primary responsibility rests with the government of DRC and more in detail, FARDC, their national army. Now, considering all these perceptions, whether it is correct or incorrect, I'm very much conscious and concerned about how we can improve and change the way United Nations peacekeeping operations has to do. That is why I'm now in the process of discussing this matter with the Security Council members. I know that this neutral forces has come from the region, but no decision has been yet made. But it is true that we are now looking at a different way, a different approach, how we can strengthen the capacity of MONUSCO, how we can effectively, more effectively and efficiently address the crisis when it happens. Thank you very much.
The gentleman, please.
Yes, sir, you talk about...
Can you please get close to the... And you introduce yourself, please.
James Bay is from Al Jazeera. You talk about... James Bay is from Al Jazeera. You talk about procedural problems, but the South African Defence Minister is telling us that the document, the framework document, which your UN staff drew up, was not consulted, not negotiated with them. Did your staff fail?
There is, again, some difference of understanding on this matter. We have circulated in confidence all these documents. I cannot talk about the internal procedures of reviewing or discussing this matter. So I'm not aware of this. But as far as United Nations Secretariat is concerned, and my personal emissary has been very continuously, very closely been coordinating with this matter. That is why I'm now saying that procedural matters. There is no fundamental differences. Maybe some of our senior advisors, she's my personal emissary, so let her say something. Yes.
Thank you, Secretary General. I'm going to change my hat now. There has been an intensive round of consultations. It is clear that the consultations had what I will call two concentric circles. The most directly involved countries were the ones who had the first round of most intensive consultations. Once there was a base agreement among themselves, we opened up to the larger community. And as the Secretary General has indicated, there has not been any difference of opinion on the substance of the framework, but there has been a need for further time to consult, and that's where we are now. Thank you. Please.
I'm sorry,
I have given the floor. I will give you the floor later, I promise.
Thank you. This is Leo from China Daily. And we know the FN troops is currently leading the battle against the rebels in Mali, but sometimes it may not result the good consequences that could be read from the past history and lessons. So my question is, what kind of efforts and cooperation should be forged when Africa is from outside, from the international community, when Africa is in front of this crisis and conflict? Thank you.
As I said earlier, I really appreciate the countries who are now providing troops and logistical support so that the Malian forces could effectively address this, you know, armed groups and the terrorist elements. In the course of this, if I may say more in the principled matter, for those terrorist groups with whom dialogue is not possible, the military operation is inevitable. That is why all African Union and Western powers, they are supporting. The United Nations is now actively considering, through my recommendation to the Security Council, how United Nations can help those African countries in terms of logistical support. And in the course of this military operation, while it is going on, I'm urging also to the Malian authorities to engage in inclusive dialogue, to have a political process going on, and to have national reconciliations through dialogue. This so that they can have constitutional order restored, they can have a political, social, economic stability ensured. That's one thing. Again, what is another important area is human rights. United Nations has a human rights due diligence policy. Then all those governments providing soldiers and working for this Malian government should abide by the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and international human rights and international humanitarian law. This is a very important principle. We are urging all those troops to strictly abide by this, to protect the human rights of civilian population, particularly a vulnerable group of people, including women and girls. This is a very important policy.
The gentleman in the back that had raised the question earlier, can you get close to a microphone, please?
Yes, please. I'm from Angola TV. I'd like to know from Mr. Secretary General about... Oh.
You have to take this.
The budget for such an operation, not only in DRC, but also in Mali. Because as far as you got to know, African countries are not in the position to get financial resources to support the logistics of this operation. How will United Nations and international community help to the budget of this operation? And how much do you expect to be needed for that? Thank you.
If you understand, if you allow me, I have here with me many senior advisors. I have briefly explained to you about my recommendation to the Security Council about logistical packages. Maybe I'd like to invite the head of peacekeeping operation, Mr. Lassus, to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Yes, the budget of the Department of Peacekeeping Operations obviously at this stage does not contain any budgetary provision for the operation in Mali. This is a matter which will have to be considered and decided upon by the Security Council on the basis of the three options that have been suggested by the Secretary General, and these range from logistics package to the possibility of assessed contributions, but this again is for Security Council to consider.
Yes, the gentleman in the corner.
Thank you, Kirvel, from Associated Press. Mr. Secretary General, as you said, the political framework for DRC is just being postponed. Is there any time frame? Is there any scheduled meeting for the countries to meet up again in a short time?
Even this morning, after postponing this signing event, I had a very close consultation through bilateral meetings with key leaders in the region. So we will expedite this process. I don't think it will take much long time. So it is a very important one to ensure peace and stability in DRC and also in the region. So they are all, you know, very much, you know, committed to that.
Gentlemen.
Ismail Kushkush for the New York Times. I wanted to hear your view on the extension of the AU-HIP mandate on Sudan and South Sudan. This is not the first time that the two leaders have not been able to reach an agreement, and another extension was given. Since last year, it was suggested if they did not reach an agreement, the case would be taken to the Security Council. What is your view?
Again, maybe I'd like to ask Mr. Lassus.
Thank you, Secretary General. The issue, as you say, is a real one, that the African Union High-Level Implementation Panel has drawn a list of issues that the two parties have to solve. And indeed, the Sudan and the South Sudan signed on 27th of September last year a set of 8 agreements. Now, all these agreements have to be implemented. But so far, despite a number of meetings, despite a number of summit meetings, including one here in Addis Ababa 2 days ago, progress still remains to be made on several major issues having to do, for instance, with security, having to do with Abyei and others. So I think the sense is that, of course, you cannot build trust after decades of war overnight, but that there has to be a new momentum between the two countries, a strong effort of leadership by their leaders to come to a complete set of agreements which will allow the two countries to live together, side by side, peacefully and in prosperity.
If I may add, I had a good meeting with the President Salva Kiir of South Sudan yesterday. And in my many bilateral meetings with African leaders in the region, I have strongly emphasized that the importance of full implementation of the agreement of September 27 last year.
I see a hand behind there. Yes, can you please come to the mic? Okay.
My name is Dumaule Moshaudi. I'm from E-News Channel Africa. I just wanted to ask a question back on the issue of the DRC. You say there's no fundamental differences. This is directed at Mr. Ban Ki-moon. There's no fundamental differences on the plan, but South Africa's defense minister is telling us that SADC and the Great Lakes region have got their own plan for a brigade to go into the eastern DRC. I just wanted to know, are you going to support their plan? Have you been told about this plan of theirs? Are you aware of it? And are you willing to put your weight behind it as the UN? Are you going to support it, or are you considering it at all?
As you all agree, the situation in DRC, particularly in the East Congo, Eastern DRC, has been source of a great concern to not only to DRC people, but in the region and to the world. That is why Security Council has been very closely, seriously seized of this issue. And that is why I have taken my personal initiative to help and facilitate this process. The political and framework which I'm now discussing and I'm hoping to get it signed by the regional leaders is not to replace or oppose or change existing initiatives in the region among in the region by the SADC or African Union or whatever. It is simply to complement and augment these existing initiatives and build upon these initiatives. Since the situation was very dire, the Security Council was very much heavily involved in this. Therefore, I really wanted to have a broader political and security framework whereby the DRC and regional countries can work together with the United Nations. This is a basic purpose. Therefore, I don't think there should be any fundamental differences in this principle. We have discussed in detailed language, and this detailed language is, I think, agreed. There were some procedural, you know, issues which we should have taken more, you know, more attention to the regional leaders. That's what I'm going to continue to discuss with them.
The gentleman.
I'm Haitham Oed from Al Jazeera. You mentioned you met more than 20 leaders in Africa. Are you discussing with them also the situation of in Eritrea and what is going on there?
During my stay this time, I didn't have much time to discuss on Eritrean issues. But this is also one of the very serious issues which we are now following. So I'd like to ask our head of our political department, Mr. Feltman.
Several of us did have the opportunity, of course, to compare notes with African leaders about their analysis of what's happening in a number of areas across the continent, Eritrea being one. And we remain quite interested in following those events and seeing where there might be opportunities. I think I'll close there. Okay. There have been conversations between us, between African leaders, other observers about what's happening across the continent in a number of areas, and Eritrea being one. And I think that there's still, from the information that we've heard, a lot of speculation underway about what actually happened. We, of course, as the United Nations, look forward to working with Eritreans and others to see where there might be opportunities.
Okay. Yeah. My name is Godwin Uka, Voice of Nigeria. Your Excellency, Secretary General of UN, in part of the plans you're making, especially in reaching out to most of these African leaders in crisis-torn areas, are there efforts towards those? Because you know, most periods when crises like this happen, the poor people suffer, starvation, diseases, and all sorts of things. Are there plans towards those who are in these rural areas in terms of ensuring that this does not go beyond what the state it is today? Thank you.
I think that's a very important question. fundamental question, but sometimes people or leaders do not pay much attention, due attention. As you will agree, even during this press conference, all the questions were raised on political crisis issues. Then why this political crisis happen in Africa or elsewhere? This is a closely related, interlinked with the development, the human dignity and human rights, and how the leaders and how the governments can meet the expectations and needs of people. When government is not able to meet the needs of people, do not listen to the people, and when their life is not in dignity, respected in dignity, then it creates some breeding grounds for mistrust and complaint and frustrations, which develops naturally into a conflict. This small conflict, community conflict, develops into national conflict, becomes a regional conflict. That is why we regard this development and how we can, how leaders of the countries can ensure sustainable development of those countries. That's why sustainable development comes number one priority of the United Nations. And I have set it as my number one priority, and everybody agrees. We are working very hard to meet the target of Millennium Development Goals, and how we will do after Millennium Development Goal target is met by 2015. So we are actively discussing post-2015 development agenda. And this is what I can tell you at this time. I am very encouraged that the new chairperson of African Union, Madame Zuma, her vision is development, African development. You know that while celebrating 50 years of anniversary of African Union, now the coming 50 years, that's Pan-Africanism and African Renaissance. Renaissance in terms of political stability, in terms of development, in terms of ensuring human dignity, human rights. This is a very good visions for Africans. That's why I've been taking this African development issue as one of my priorities. How to feed people, how to feed 1 billion in Africa, several hundred million people are still hungry. Now how to provide water and sanitation, and provide medicines to sick people, and how to save human lives who otherwise would have been dying needlessly. This is very important. So the priority should be on how to help our people enjoy their lives as a human being with the dignity.
Colleagues, one last question. The gentleman in the back.
Thanks. Secretary General, when the UN Security Council resolution on Mali was passed in December, you were fairly widely quoted as saying that you thought the use of force should absolutely be the last resort. It seems now to have been the first resort. How much concern do you have that UN involvement and engagement in this military operation in northern Mali is going to put the neutrality of UN operations elsewhere under some kind of question? Is that still a concern that you have?
When it comes to the approach, whether certain crises should be addressed by military means or political processes, I don't think it is not only me. All the world's leaders agree that political process should prevail. And all the pending issues, all the crises or difference of views should be resolved peacefully through dialogue. In the case of Mali, when Security Council debated and adopted the resolution 2085, they realized, and we realized, that the threat to human lives was imminent. Unless there was immediate measures, whatever measures, including military, a lot of human lives would be lost, and destruction of the societies, and destruction of the systems, constitutional and democratic system. That is why some countries like the French and ECOWAS member states have taken such measure, military measures. And Security Council was very clear in its resolution that they should provide necessary assistance. As far as the United Nations is concerned, we do not have such capacity in addressing the crisis through military means. That is why it has been done on a bilateral basis or regional basis in military means. In my statement, I said that while we understand the inevitability of this military operation, the political process should take place. And this military means should be part of comprehensive political process. That is one fundamental principle and approach we are taking and whole international community should take. You talk about neutrality of the United Nations. United Nations is not, sometimes should not, you know, cannot take a neutral position. United Nations takes impartial positions. When there is a clear violation of human rights, clear violation of fundamental principles, then United Nations has to take side, criticize those perpetrators. Should United Nations keep neutral in the face of such a violation of human rights? So please don't, I hope that there should be clear understanding about the United Nations. United Nations can never be always neutral, but United Nations in our working impartial way. At the same time, I have to tell you that the safety and security of many humanitarian workers working on the ground and United Nations staff and civilian populations, their safety and security should be protected. That is one other concerns that the United Nations is putting for priority focus. Thank you very much.
Colleagues, I know you have many more questions, but the Secretary General has a very packed program. So we thank you for being here, and we look forward to seeing you next year.